Well, first this morning, we take you to Afghanistan, where the Taliban has launched fresh assaults across the country as the United States begins withdrawing troops ahead of a September deadline. Taliban insurgents have captured a district in the country's north just days after Afghan security forces fought back a major Taliban offensive in the southern province of Helmand, forcing thousands of civilians to flee their homes. It comes as US intelligence analysts fear that the rights and well-being of women are under serious threat as the Taliban makes inroads to regain power. And a new Human Rights Watch report warns that a drop in international donor funding is further harming the lives of many Afghan women and girls. Heather Barr is the interim co-director for the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch. I spoke to her earlier from Islamabad.
Thank you.
How concerned is Human Rights Watch about the future for women and girls in Afghanistan as foreign troops leave and the amount of foreign aid is under threat?
So we're extremely concerned, and part of the reason we're extremely concerned is because we've done research in the last month or so where we looked at the current situation with health services. And what we found is that services for women have already been hit really hard by reductions in donor aid that's already happened over recent years. So just to give you an example, between 2013 and 2019, donor funding for the health sector fell by 26%. And so we're really concerned that that was happening while the troops were still in the country, and now that the troops are leaving, that funding's going to fall off a cliff.
And what does that mean, Heather, for individual women? I understand in some cases women who are getting ready to give birth, if they need a cesarean, they need to buy their own medical equipment, scalpels and things like that.
Yeah, so pretty much everyone who goes to get treatment at a government health facility these days is having to pay for supplies that you would think would be absolutely standard in a hospital, things like gloves and gauze and sterilizing fluid, and serums and so on. But the hospitals have had their budgets cut so much over recent years that they no longer have any money left to pay for these things. And so that cost is being passed on to patients. And, you know, it's worth remembering that the World Bank estimates that 61-72% of Afghans are below the poverty line. So those costs might not seem like a lot of money to you or I, but they're high enough that it's going to make care actually completely out of reach for a lot of people who desperately need it.
Is there much variation across the country, Heather, from rural to urban areas and also those areas which are controlled by the Afghan government compared to those that are controlled by the Taliban?
Yeah, there's a lot of variety. And you know, the situation I'm describing with the healthcare services being really, you know, not great quality and difficult to access and costly, that's in the capital. That's the place in the country that has the best access to health services. So the women that I interviewed, a lot of them had traveled in from, you know, miles and miles away, sometimes traveling 5, 6, 7 hours to get to Kabul to be able to access a hospital, and sometimes traveling through areas where there was fighting. So, for example, I asked one woman how long it took to travel from her home to the hospital. And she'd come each time she was giving birth, and she said, you know, it's 5 or 6 hours if there's no fighting, but if there's fighting, we don't know.
And for women, particularly with the issue of childbirth, the statistics used to have it as one of the most dangerous places in the world for a woman to give birth. Has that figure improved, or is it still the case?
Well, it's improved, but it's still 638 deaths per 100,000 births, which UNICEF calls very high. And I think the big concern that we have is looking at how the barriers to accessing treatment for women have actually gotten higher. And, you know, there's data that shows that the percentage of women who are having access to prenatal care and who are having attended births is stagnating or even falling. That suggests that maternal mortality rate could actually be on its way back up already.
And Heather, what do we know about the figures for education, the percentage of girls that are in school at the moment?
So we looked at that a couple of years ago, and what we found was that The number of girls going to school was actually falling in a significant number of provinces as well. So I think what that really highlights is that, you know, we've heard a lot about the progress that's been made in Afghanistan, but that progress actually leveled off a few years ago, I think, and is on its way back down in some important ways. And this troop withdrawal, it's not the fact of the troops leaving. It's the fact that, you know, the world's attention and interest and caring may be leading with the troops, and that could have devastating impacts on education and healthcare, and we could see these systems begin to really collapse.
What about the change that has been driven by Afghan leaders and Afghan activists and feminists? If we're talking about the foreign aid and the foreign troops, is in that way, some ways, underestimating the change that's been brought within Afghan society itself?
It's a good question, and it's a fair question. I think it's totally possible, though, to talk about how important and necessary the aid is without forgetting to acknowledge that all of the changes that have happened have been driven by activists from Afghanistan, women, and sometimes men as well in Afghanistan who have fought for these rights. But what the foreign aid has done is it's provided the money that pays for the school, that pays for the hospital, that pays for the midwife training program, et cetera. So it's really been this kind of combination of those two factors. And if you take away the international support, the donor funding, you'll still have these incredible Afghan activists, but they will have lost some very important tools to be able to pursue their cause.
So it sounds like you're talking about one thing, a change in attitudes and practices, but the other thing is having the resources to do something about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
What signals have we had from the peace talks about the Taliban's public intentions when it comes to the future of women and girls in Afghanistan? Is there any hope there?
I think that some of the folks who've been involved in the negotiations, including the four women who were part of the Doha talks, have tried really hard to see the positive side of things, because no one's got any other solution for how to bring peace in Afghanistan except through a negotiation. But there isn't really anything to be very optimistic about based on the Taliban's behavior. You know, both their public statements and their actual actions on the ground in the areas that they are in control of make it pretty clear that their views on women's rights are pretty identical to where they were in 2001. They've shifted a little bit on things like saying that girls should be allowed to go to primary school, but even that they're not actually following through on in a lot of areas. It's really up to local commanders, and some local commanders aren't even ready to accept that.
So what's the message from Human Rights Watch to the donor community internationally?
So our main message with this report is to say that when you bring your troops home, you need to not bring your aid with them. Afghanistan is really facing a humanitarian crisis at the moment. That poverty rate that I mentioned, that's gone up dramatically because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And so there's more need than ever before to try and stabilize things and keep people alive and keep schools open in the next months and years. So as countries bring their troops home, they should be at least sustaining current levels of aid, and we'd love to see them consider whether there's money that they're saving by not having forces on the ground that they could reinvest in these essential services.
Heather Barr, thank you for joining us on RN Breakfast.
Thank you.
That's Heather Barr, the Interim Co-Director for the Women's Rights Division at Human Rights Watch.